Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 21st, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guests, Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well.
And DR, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing?
So you guys, you know both of the, all dear listener, you all know both of these people. Mariah is an author and a climate hawk. DR Tucker is a blogger, a literary media maven, knower of all things, and our go-to guy for facts. Anyway, welcome aboard, everybody. So, you know, there's a lot going on out there in the big world of climate. And sometimes it gets to be like a storm surge, where all of a sudden the water's up around your ears. But one of the things that happened this past couple of weeks is that our fearless leader, the Orange Fuhrer, let it be known that maybe he would stay in the Paris Accords through some sort of subterfuge of someone else within his administration, kind of saying that, oh, what he said he didn't really mean, but we're all going to be in the Paris Accord. The Paris Accord, of course, is a completely voluntary agreement signed a couple of years ago that should regulate. Not regulate, it allows people to do their countries to do their best to cut carbon pollution as they see fit, right, DR? So tell me, DR, tell me the story of the Paris, Mr. President 45's last visit to Paris, so to speak.
Well, a few days ago, the Wall Street Journal erroneously reported that the Trump administration was considering staying in the Paris Climate Agreement. And literally within a few hours, CNN and USA Today reported that, according to White House officials, the Trump administration is, in fact, dead set on getting out of the Paris climate deal, which obviously left a lot of egg on the face of the Wall Street Journal, as you might imagine. And still on the morning news shows after the Wall Street Journal ran this story, there's, you know, some of the White House administration officials were saying, you know, if we can get a better deal, I think Rex Tillerson was one of these guys saying, if we can get a better deal, we'll stay in. But the problem is, of course, is that there is no better deal. And it's clearly obvious that, you know, for ideological purposes, they still want out. It's very ironic that, you know, Trump gets up at the UN and starts talking about, you know, Kim Jong-un being Rocket Man. In reality, Trump is the Rocket Man because he's going to allow emissions to rocket up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with you. All this talk about what's, you know, we need to get a better deal for the United States. I mean, for people who have listened to this show and people who pay attention or have thought it, understand what the Paris Agreement is. It is totally voluntary. Right? You only do what you can promise to do. Right. So it's not as if there's some better deal. I mean, in some settings, Trump could say the United States is not going to reduce its carbon emissions at all and still remain within the Paris Accord. Right. It's more of a drop dead message to the rest of the world to pull out. Right? Is that a fair statement, Mariah?
Well, you know, it's something that I just heard someone say is that one of the big missteps for Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement is he's freed up the rest of the world to establish a set of rules without any input from the United States. Right. So, you know, by sort of stepping out, he's basically let people do things without our interests being represented.
Right. And there was the thing I read said that, you know, everyone touts there's 193 countries in the Paris Accord. If the United States pulls out, then there's 192 countries, right? The rest of the world has not broken ranks, right? Mm-hmm. To your point, Mariah, I mean, everyone else is staying in, and that really isolates the United States. Well, and I heard somewhere on the radio coming home tonight that Theresa May at the UN today had some sort of sideways hit on Trump for trying to pull out of the Paris Accord. I mean, which is surprising because Theresa May is not your biggest climate hawk. Mm-hmm. Well, Anyway, there's that. I guess I've reached the point where I'm very skeptical when I hear some breaking news that this guy's going to do when you know Trump makes some statement. It just, you know, FDR, as you said, show me the money.
Exactly.
Go too much farther. Well, so,
you know, this was something I just stumbled on that Reagan actually, Ronald Reagan actually convened the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, which is mm-hmm. of course what the Paris Climate Agreement is based a lot of their decisions on. And you know, it's the IPCC reports are, you know, pretty substantial in all this. And I don't know, I hadn't realized that it was started by Reagan.
It goes a long way back. So, right? It goes way back. I mean, in fact, it was a George H.W. Bush, you know, flew to Rio with a big flourish to sign the thing. Right? That was back in the day when, well, speaking of flying to Rio and stuff like that, countries, you know, outside the United States, Mariah, I heard somewhere that there was we have had this ongoing catastrophe in the United States between hurricanes and now poor Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands are getting getting beat up by Hurricane Maria. There's forest fires in the Northeast, but we should not be too parochial. I mean, there's things going on around the world that are honest to God climate events, right? I mean, we were talking before about something going on in India. I mean, what's the state of play there?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, so Jeremy Lent from EcoWatch wrote an article called "The Climate Catastrophe We All Ignore." And it basically said that, you know, the damage in Houston and in Florida is nothing compared to the climate damage caused in India, Bangladesh, and Nepal, where there's, you know, more than 1,200 deaths with 40 million people affected by massive flooding. You know, I was actually at the COP21 discussions, and I was talking to this girl from Bangladesh who said, you know, it used to be that our students couldn't go to school like 2 weeks out of the month. And so fine, because, you know, the rivers would flood, and finally they had to start building floating schools so that the kids could go to school. They just had to say, all right, well, you know, this is the new normal, this massive flooding. So, you know, and of course, Africa is also suffering with hundreds of thousands of people affected.
I mean, you hear these things about mudslides in Africa, right? From the rain. Did you? And in India, I think, as well, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's, you know, we're seeing the suffering, certainly, but, you know, the rest of the world is really getting hammered, and it's a catastrophe that, you know, we're sort of deliberating on for some weird reason.
Yeah. No, and it's easy to, I mean, here we are. I mean, as we're speaking, Hurricane Maria is just leaving Puerto Rico, right? We've got Hurricane Irma has beat up on Florida, and long, long time ago, like 10 years ago, there was a hurricane in Houston, right? It just seems like this stuff is happening so fast that you almost start to lose track of, you know, what's the, you know, who's the latest victim of stuff.
Right. You can't even catch your breath between disasters.
Well, I heard a thing on earlier today about Puerto Rico. They said that they're going to be out of, that basically there's no functioning electricity anywhere on the island now. Right. This is a U.S. territory. This is the United States citizens. There's no electricity anywhere on the island. And then it's going to be months before they can fully reestablish that grid. Did you hear anything like that, either of you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the first, Irma knocked out, you know, two-thirds of the grid, and they got that back up and running fairly quickly. But this, they don't think, I mean, this is the second hit it's taken in such a short time that it's going to be a long time. So if only they all had solar panels, right?
Last week we talked about whether or not in the wake of these disasters, what sort of plan should green types, climate hawks, put forward to rebuild. And I think here's a case where you have this isolated, you know, not isolated, but this an island, right, that is all by itself. You know it's going to get hit with hurricanes. So anything that's built should be resilient against future hurricanes. And that seems like a perfect example of distributed energy, solar panels, wind turbines, you know, microgrids. Rebuild a place as an example and as a test case for how you would do it in other places. Because, you know, someone's going to pay for that rebuilding, right?
Exactly. Right. Sort of like a shock doctrine in reverse.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's so Greensburg, Kansas had, you know, I think we talked about this before, but they had an enormous tornado that leveled the town and they rebuilt it green. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it would be great to see more people sort of taking note from that and moving forward sustainably.
Yeah, well, and I think that is beholden. It's something that people like us should be propagating, that when these things happen, we should not just sit back and rebuild telephone poles with wires on them, right? That we need to think about how to rebuild both, you know, well, sustainably, which would be both adaptive and mitigation, right? Both sides of the coin would come together in rebuilding these devastated places.
I think you mentioned a couple weeks in a podcast maybe last week or so, about we sort of need like a roadmap, right? You know, okay, you have something happen in your town. Here are the quick, fast steps you can get to becoming green and to building renewably. Somebody needs to do it. Maybe us.
I think maybe we ought to get a an expert in here and talk to that person to see what. So I guess the other thing, there's continuing stuff going on. I heard that something happened with FERC in upstate New York or in New York. Does anyone have any background on that?
Yeah. Basically the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, granted a natural gas company permission to move forward on a pipeline, despite the fact that New York State's Department of Environmental Conservation refused to grant the company the water permit required under the Clean Water Act. Basically, they said, you know, that this is going to pollute our water. We don't want this pipeline. And, you know, FERC gave it to them anyway, which to me raises these enormous alarm bells to have the federal, you know, to have FERC overriding preservation of water. Yeah, water for the communities and it was based on a deadline discrepancy, which was a little dubious to me.
It seems that just FERC was set up in the 70s to make sure that we never ran out of power, but basically is now a captured, which you would call a captured agency, right? It's a federal agency that essentially tries to assist the permitting of energy projects, which in 1970 was all oil, right? But now, but they still have the mentality, they're still captured by the oil industry to approve all these things, right? And there's a kind of a background debate about who should be appointed. And I think that FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, has three or five commissioners, and there's only three of them in place or something. There's some kind of DR. Do you know what this story is there?
Yes, there's only three members on the board right now. According to Think Progress, two of Trump's appointees joined a Democratic appointee to make this unanimous decision to overturn the state agency's ruling. And I can't help noting the irony that this decision occurred right around the time of that great Bill Maher segment talking about how states that want to address climate change have essentially have to assert states' rights against an overreaching federal government. Because here you have a case of an overreaching federal government trying to, you know, to impose its will upon a state that wants to move away from dirty energy and trying to essentially force more dirty energy upon an unwilling populace. How the dimensions have turned around, so to speak.
So the whole FERC thing we've talked about before, and there's ups and downs. I think New York had some victory as well. Like, now I'm really on shaky ground because I don't have the link, but they rejected some pipeline somewhere, and it held, right? Ring a bell with one of you guys?
I do recall that.
Maybe we'll talk about it sometime.
I do, too. I don't have the info.
All right. Well, look, there's lots and lots of stuff going on. In fact, too much to even keep up with most of the time. But what we'll do is put it down there, and we will put up links to some of the things that we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find the podcast on Facebook at /massclimateaction. Of course, you can listen to us on most streaming services like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thanks for having me.
DR, thank you so much for being around.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We really appreciate your taking the time. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.